Part 9, Chapter 2. Johnny gazed with horror into the deep canyon. There was a flying drill platform down there, close to the river, and it was in real trouble. It was the day after their return from Yerevan. The storm had blown over, leaving a sparkling, white-coated day. But at these altitudes, it was bitterly cold, and the canyon, as ever, was funneling winds into torrents of turbulence. Two Scots, one of them Dunaldine, the other a black-haired youth named Andrew, were down on that platform trying to recover the staircase, which had fallen 900 feet down into the frozen river. 60 feet long and built of rods, it had pierced the river ice, leaving an end on the bank. They had grappled the end with a hook lowered from the flying drill platform and had tried to fly the staircase up and out of the river. It was caught underwater. Now sprays coming up through the broken ice were coating the platform with water that instantly froze, increasing the platform's weight by the moment. He knew what they were trying to do. They were trying to look busy for the benefit of the recon drone that would be there in a moment or two. The rest of the shift crew were strung out along the chasm's edge, untangling the masses of cables and drums that had been scrambled by the storm. Dunaldine and Andrew had gone down there to look busy salvaging the staircase. Johnny had been returning in the small passenger plane to work out some new method of getting the gold. He didn't have a co-pilot. He had only old Dr. McDermott, the historian, who had begged a ride so that he could come up to the load and write the saga of the storm. The ancient Scot, who had considered himself expendable at the recruiting, was a very wise and valued dean of literature, but he was not in the slightest bit trained in their work, and frail beyond estimation, with hardly the muscle and skill one needed. There was no time at all to drop down and pick up a trained and agile Scot from the site on the cliff. They were using local radios. All the items of equipment had them built in, for their range and the range of mine intercoms was only a mile. The transmissions were also masked by the mountains to the east. The radio down there on the platform was evidently open.
"Throw off the rail brakes, Andrew,"
Dunaldine was saying tensely.
"The motors are overheated.
They will not disengage. It is the spray.
Andrew, disengage the hooks to that staircase."
"They will not budge, Dunaldine, and the thing is stuck under the ice."
The whine of the overloaded motors was also coming through the open mics. Johnny knew what was going to happen. They couldn't fly the platform free. They couldn't drop down into the roiling, freezing water. And that platform was going to go up in flames any moment. Such a platform had rudimentary flying controls, usually covered by a lead glass canopy. But the humans didn't use the canopies, and Dunaldine was down there in the midst of flying spray that was coating not only himself, but also the controls with instant ice. The recon drone would be by in another second or two. It must see efforts to mine, not disaster. Johnny could hear its nearing rumble outside his open side port. Its hypersonic explosion would occur any moment now. The instant it went by, he would have to somehow get those two off that platform.
"Dr. Mac!"
shouted Johnny into the rear of the plane.
"Get ready! You're about to be a hero!"
"Oh my goodness,"
said Dr. McDermott.
"Open the side door and throw out two lifelines! Make sure our ends are secure to the ship!"
The old man scrambled about, grabbing at unfamiliar coils and tangles of cables in the rear.
"Hold on!"
He sent the passenger craft plummeting 1,000 feet into the racketing, wind-blasting roar of the chasm. The walls flashed by. Dr. McDermott's stomach stayed 1,000 feet up. The nearby white and red blur of canyon walls streaked past the open door, and he stared at it, open-mouthed, barely able to hold on.